At this time, I would like to invite Paul and Martha Snyder to the front. I can't quite tell from the camera angle if they're heading up or not. There we go, yes.
A little nervous about playing spawning my head. Here.
Wonderful. And I think there's a microphone there. Hi, Martha. I'm so sorry that I can't be with you all in person here. As you might be able to tell from the sound of my voice, I'm not fully fit to be among other people at the moment. So
Zach, before we start, before you start with the questions.
Yes. Yes, we can hear you. Yeah.
I would just like to say that when we were preparing this, we were just going to be ad-libbing everything, and we thought we should write things down so we don't forget something. And then in that process, I typed it all, sent it to Roger, and he printed it off for us. And then when I got it back yesterday, I just could not read it with my... even with my magnifier.
Yeah.
I have to know I am getting older and I really am legally blind. So, so I've asked our dear daughter, Colleen, to read the parts that I would have read. And so we're just so pleased that she can do that. But the first question is going to mostly be Paul speaking and me telling a few stories. And but the questions 2 and 3, Colleen will be doing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for letting us know that, Martha. And thanks to all of you for your willingness to share this morning. Paul and Martha, on this third Sunday of Advent, we are exploring the theme, Tell What You See and Hear. In our scripture reading this morning, we heard that John the Baptist had sent word to Jesus from prison. John had wondered if Jesus was really the hoped-for Messiah spoken of in Isaiah, and so the disciples asked Jesus this on behalf of John, and Jesus replied by saying, "Go and tell John what you hear and what you see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them." The signs that people in Jesus's day were looking for to indicate the Messiah's coming were signs of restoration in that day. Where there was brokenness, Jesus brought restoration and healing. I know from several visits with you over this past year that one significant area of brokenness that you have witnessed in the broader church has been the church's exclusion of LGBTQ people and the negative impact that has had on so many lives. And maybe what came as a surprise to both of you was that amidst that brokenness, you heard God's call to be prophetic voices for change and for healing in the church. A call to be part of God's movement of restoration in the church by advocating for the full inclusion of LGBTQ people in the life of the church. Would you be willing to share a bit about this call, when you first heard it, and where did it lead you to go, and what did it lead you to do?
We did not choose this journey. The journey chose us.
We will be listing things that we have been involved in and telling more personal stories later on. We attended Lauraville connecting families groups that met biannually. We met with gatherings for parents of gay people, with many children attending, and parents and family members attended meetings. We went to a lot of retreats held by gay people, by LGBT persons. The BMC Mennonite Council for Gay and Lesbians and the concerns. We talked about these concerns.
One of those BMC meetings that we attended, by the way, that's not Bloomingdale, that is Brethren and Mennonite Council for Gay and Lesbian and Concerns. We attended a gathering at Manchester College, I believe it was in Indiana, and it was quite an experience. The first evening that we were in the auditorium, we saw that in front of the pulpit area, there were several boxes. We just didn't quite know what that was all about, but anyhow, we had a wonderful service. And then the next day when we went back in, there were more boxes there, and just they were higher than they were. And it was a little baffling. Nothing was said as to why they were there. And each time we were there, it was just a little bigger, and it was beginning to look like a wall. And yeah, and then the last day, the Sunday morning, we were going to be having communion, and we were going to be having a service as well. And when we got in, that wall was gone, but there was a big table in front of the pulpit area, and they had taken all those boxes. They had built a table with them, put beautiful cloths over it. There were the communion elements on the table and flowers. And it, what was a wall turned into a place of fellowship and communion. It was very touching and moving when they explained it all to us. It was so interesting when we were having communion, because many of the young people that were there hadn't had communion for years, and some were crying when they took of communion, and some were actually dancing around the table. And the theme of the weekend was dancing at the table.
We attended many international Mennonite church conferences in the U.S. and Canada before each country had their own conference. At Purdue University in Indiana, we gave a seminar with Roger and a pastor, with so many people attending that they had to change to a much larger room at the last minute.
Is it me next?
Mennonite Church Canada's gathering and University of Waterloo.
One of the conferences that we were at was in Waterloo, and it was so close to home, it was easy to go, Mennonite Church Canada. One afternoon session, there was a young man from, I believe, Winnipeg sharing his story. He was a gay man, and some people in the audience were not very nice to him. And we were feeling very sorry for him. And but anyhow, it was time then for the break. And we were out in the hall kind of milling around until session started again. And the moderator of conference came up to Paul and said, "Paul, if you have something to say, now is the time to say it." And Paul just did not know what to say. So he remembered the Bob Dylan song. And then after the session started again, when the moderator called and anyone from the floor to speak, Paul lifted his hand, and the guy came over with the mic and said to him, "You may speak." And Paul said, "I have two questions to ask. One is, how many years must a people exist before they're allowed to be free? And how many times will we all turn our heads pretending we just don't see?" The congregation stood up and started clapping, And the parliamentarian got up and went to the mic and said, no clapping from the audience.
We attended some Mennonite, this is Eastern Canada, conferences. And we also spoke in many churches. Many churches asked us to share our story at their Sunday services. 36 times, in fact. Martha was on the listening committee for LGBTQ concerns and the Theological Concerns Committee for several years.
While I was on those committees, by the way, they were joined together into one, we decided that it would be a good idea to have a large group, a large weekend together with anyone that wanted to come to learn a bit more about the gays and their concerns and our concerns as parents. And anyhow, we just did not know who to invite. And I finally suggested, what about Peggy and Tony Campolo? They are, you know, they speak, and I think Tony is very, very good at talking, and he's very concerned about the gay issue, as it was called in those days. And so somebody in the committee sent a letter off to Tony's, Tony Campolo, by the way, is a speaker and an evangelist in Pennsylvania. And they sent a letter off to the guy that looks after his speaking engagements. And we got a reply back, no, he can't come. So, oh, we were so disappointed because we were going to plan a whole weekend around this. And I said, you know, I'll bet you if I would contact Peggy, his wife, they'd come. So I had known Peggy because she had spoken at Laurelville at a Connecting Families group when we were there one time, and her and I kind of hit it off. We got to know each other well. And so anyhow, I contacted Peggy. Peggy says, well, I'll get back to you soon. And she did. And she said, and it was a yes. So anyhow, Peggy and Tony came, and Paul and I had the privilege of going to the airport and picking them up, and then after it was over, taking them back again. So the first part of the evening was at the Warden North Church. We had a dinner together, and it was only the pastors that were there from the Mennonite churches. And before Tony spoke to them, he said, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Martha Snyder. And then the next, after the supper, there was a big meeting at Rim Park, and there were about 1,000 people that came to that. And yeah, it was quite amazing. And the next day, there was a meeting at the Breslau Mennonite Church for only Mennonite people that were looking at this, I wanted to learn more. And so anyhow, it was a very good session. Both of them spoke. One, like Tony's idea of gay people was just so amazing, but he did not feel they should be able to be married. And yet Peggy was just the opposite. She thought they should be married. Why can't they get married? Yeah, so it was, they had a little discussion about this in front of us, and it was a good model for us in churches to see how you can still love each other and not agree on everything.
Our parents group wrote letters of advocacy to Mennonite churches in Eastern Canada. Willard Metzger, the moderator of Mennonite Church Canada, spoke at our parents group meeting and heard our concerns. Martha collected articles and letters from our church papers for the office of the Brethren Mennonite Council and executive. What they did with them, we don't know. Yes.
Oh, yes, we gathered. It was quite interesting how this all happened. Because we were a group of parents of gay people, we got to know a lot of gay people, and it was just wonderful. And some of these were very broken people. They had been sort of neglected by their parents. And there were several people that came and stayed with us, maybe for a day or two, or one was there for a month. And yeah, it was quite amazing. There was one girl. So Paul, I'm not sure if I'm reading into yours or not. It doesn't really matter. I'll just continue. Well, there was one girl whose father was a Mennonite minister, and he was so adamant that she gets married to a man. And he made life very unpleasant for her, to put it mildly. And she came to our place several times. And one time we were sitting in the living room together, after the three of us, after we had finished dinner. And Paul was on the couch and I was on the chair beside the couch. And she sat down beside the chair that Paul was sitting on. And, you know, all she needed was to be close to a father figure that was okay with who she was. And while she was sitting there, she said, "I just wish I could stay with you guys forever." That was kind of heartbreaking. There was another guy who, he was a Mexican Mennonite from Aylmer, and his parents were very, by the way, most of the friends that we have had roots in the Mennonite church, which is, you know, wonderful to know, but many of them were not part of the church anymore. Anyhow, this fellow was very upset because, of course, his parents would not accept him. But there was a bit of a restoration in that whole process. He found a wonderful man, and they were married. They go to a Mennonite church in Toronto now. And during this process, his parents' heart softened, and he was allowed at first to come home only by himself, not with his partner. But eventually, they allowed the partner to come too. He said things are always a little strained, but at least we're together again, and he was always so glad to see them. So, Paul, I think I combined a couple together. Sorry.
All of these experiences have helped to shape us. We saw a need for inclusion. We saw a great injustice, a lack of restorative love. And we heard stories that broke our hearts. So we just had to do something. Looking back over those 30 plus years with the parents group at our side, we feel blessed. We were strengthened. We feel that with all the parents working and praying together, we help to make a difference in the church. If that is a call, then thank God we listened.
That's it for question one.
Wonderful. Yes. Oh, thank you so much for answering. Yeah, as a follow-up question, would you be willing to share some ways that God's restoration has been at work in your own lives, transforming you throughout this process of advocating for the full inclusion of LGBTQ people? How have you changed through this process?
Imagine I'm my mom for a moment. When our son Roger came out as gay, it was a real shock. We did not know much at all about homosexuality. In fact, we had heard of a couple that we knew who were getting divorced because he was gay. We also heard it was no wonder he was gay. His mother was a battle axe and his father was a wimp. Were we at fault? I cried a lot for a few days. I prayed a lot. I could relate to the Bible verse, pray without ceasing. What will the people at church think? How will we tell our parents? I'm a good mom, and Paul's a good dad. God, please change this whole thing. After much reading and praying and being aware of God's love, change did come, and it was in me and not our son. Our son needed us. We loved him so much. We would do what we could to make things better.
We felt so isolated and alone. Who could we talk to? Was there even one a couple in our Mennonite church area with a gay son? We heard of a gay man who attended First Mennonite Church in Kitchener. We met with his parents. Their son connected the four of us with another couple. So with much discussion and prayer, the parents' support room, which lasted 30 years, was born. Over the years, we met many gay persons. Many of them were very broken persons. Their parents were not accepting them. Well, I'm sorry, this is... Okay. Yes. Yes, I think we covered that.
Yeah. Would Paul and Martha, would you like me to go on to question three, or did you have more to say on the second one?
I think Pauline and Paul have
We talked about this young lady that was at our place. The next person was from the Ottawa Street Mennonite Brethren Church. His parents just did not want him to come home if he did not change his ways. He wanted us to meet with his parents, which we did. They were very adamant that he was very sinful. One time he came to our door in the evening. When he came in, he was shaking and crying. He hung on to Martha for a long time crying. The three of us sat and talked. He had tried to see his parents. That was why he was so distraught. We feel that the safe place we provided for these three and others as well gave a needed time of restoration for their spirit and a feeling of being loved by a parent. Another time that restoration of spirits was needed was at a Laurelville Retreat Center. There were quite a few gay persons there. They loved to sing. After sessions were over, they crowded around the piano and played and sang with great gusto the hymns they had sung in their churches when they were younger. None of them attended church anymore. A favorite song of theirs was, "There's a Wideness in God's Mercy."
Our parents' group felt we needed a more spiritual direction, so we asked a retired pastor if she would fill that job for us. She has a way of making the scriptures speak to us parents in such a loving way. One time when she was there at the beginning of sharing, she said, "Today I am truly one of you. My daughter came out to us to me this week." That was a very special day.
Yes, we have changed. The thing that changed our attitudes most, we feel, were the lives of our son and the great guys and gals we have met. They had integrity, not the abomination that the televangelists talk about. Our friends have helped change us. God's love has changed us. The stories we have heard have changed us. The journey that started out heavy has also brought much joy. We are truly blessed with 3 sons and a daughter.
That's it, Zach.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, so the last question that I had suggested was, more recently at BMC, we presented you both with prayer shawls and blessed you in this time in your life when you may not be able to worship with us as regularly as you had in the past. But I know you both still have a special place in your heart for this congregation. And we too continue to hold you both in prayer and still also really desire to have your voices, your prophetic voices, speak to us. So with that in mind, I wonder, having been part of BMC for many years, what are your dreams for Bloomingdale Mennonite Church?
Continue being the church you are. There are some things here that are so important. You welcome new people well, and that is important. You make children feel special and have them participate in scripture reading and music. You are not set in your ways of doing things the way they have always been done.
Our dream for you is that one day when you redo your mission statement, that you will have the courage to mention in that statement that LGBTQ persons are welcome. You would be surprised how many times a gay person has gone to a church that says that all are welcome, and it turned out that they were not welcome. Maybe even have a rainbow sticker visible somewhere. If there's a disagreement over the homosexual issue, talk things over, come to an agreement to disagree so persons do not leave the church. That has been one of our greatest sorrows, that some people have left because of this.
May God give you at Bloomingdale and us in our little retirement apartment grace for the journey and hope for the future.
Thank you so much, Paul and Martha and Colleen, for helping out. Yes, absolutely. Bless you all.